Good morning, everyone. I'm so excited for us today to embark on a brand new journey that we've called the Divine Warrior, in which we're going to look at the armor of God that He promises, that God promises to every believer, and that we read about in Ephesians chapter 6. But before we get into and looking at the armor of God and what it is and how it works, it seems like we need to set the stage a little bit and ask the question, why do we even need armor? And this is a great question, and the answer is simple, and it's because there is a war that is busy being waged. And so Ephesians chapter 6 verse 12 says, "For we do not wrestle against," we do not wrestle. And I wonder how many of you feel like life can be a bit of a wrestling match, that you're wrestling against an unreasonable boss, or with an unruly spouse, or with disobedient children. You're wrestling with the devil dog that seems to take great delight in destroying anything that you hold precious. And so for some of you, life really resonates as a wrestle, as a wrestling match. The NIV talks about a struggle that we do not struggle against, it says. And I wonder how many of you feel like life is a struggle, you know, struggling to make ends meet, or struggling with your thought life, or struggling with loneliness and isolation, or struggling with anxiety and depression, or struggling with temptation for many of you around the avocado pear, right? That we all know Adam and Eve ate in the Garden of Eden. Only an ever could bring sin into the world, right? And I recently learned that the ever goes by a new name, and it's also known as the avocado. And so some of you are struggling with your temptations around the avocado. But all jokes aside, life can be a fight. It can be a struggle. It can be a wrestling match. In fact, the NLT talks about a fight that we do not fight against, it says. And it reminds me of being in Standard 9, grade 11, on my way to the tuck shop. And there was this guy that really didn't like me. And he cornered me and he started a fight. And it was just one of those beautiful moments in life where everything went right for me and wrong for him. And it was like I could see his every move before he did it. And I could see him swinging from a mile away, and he almost telegraphed it to me. It was just beautiful. And so life can be a bit of a fight, you know. But I think it's important at this moment to come and just qualify that there is a lie in Christian circles that is perpetuated, that maybe you have even perpetuated, that you live out, or that you've shared with other people, that you believe and have said that if you come to Jesus, all your problems are going to go away, that life is going to be a breeze, that it's going to be like sitting by the pool drinking a pina colada. And the truth is so far from that. This is a lie from the pit of hell. It's a load of piffle. And it's totally inconsistent with what James, the brother of Jesus, says in James chapter 1 verse 2, where he says, "Consider it a pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds." You see, God allows this wrestling, this struggling, this fighting, these trials, these sufferings in our lives, because He understands that they are a fiery furnace that begins to forge our character into Christ-likeness. And God understands that we begin to find and identify more than ever before with Jesus in our sufferings. And so perhaps my story of my Standard 9, my grade 11 fight is just a little inaccurate to how life is. And perhaps a better example is my fight in Standard 6. And so in case you're wondering, I went to Jeppy Boys, and this was just standard operating procedure. And in fact, it was my first day of high school. We had class and we were in the library meeting everyone and trying to figure, you know, I guess the pecking order out. And I was sitting on a desk, and next thing, some guy just came and hooked me. And he just swiped me across my face. And it was out of the blue. And it's what we would have called a liberty or a cheap shot. We just didn't see it coming. And perhaps this is a truer, more real reflection of life, of how life is, that sometimes we just don't see it coming. And in the same way, some of us, we just don't see things coming. We just don't see the struggles or the fights or the wrestles that are coming our way. And the question is why? And the answer is simple, because it's easy to miss what you're not looking for.
Clearly, somebody in this room murdered Lord Smythe, who, at precisely 3:34 this afternoon, was brutally bludgeoned to death with a blunt instrument. I want each of you to tell me your whereabouts at precisely the time that this dastardly deed took place.
I was polishing the brass in the master bedroom.
I was buttering his lordship's scones below stairs, sir.
Why, I was planting my petunias in the potting shed.
Constable, arrest Lady Smythe.
But how did you know?
Madam, as any horticulturist will tell you, one does not plant petunias until May is out. Take her away.
Sorry, madam.
It's just a matter of observation. The real question is, how observant were you?
Action.
Clearly, somebody in this room murdered Lord Smythe, who, at precisely 3:34 this afternoon, was brutally bludgeoned to death with a blunt instrument. I want each of you to tell me your whereabouts at precisely the time that this dastardly deed took place.
I was polishing the brass in the master bedroom.
I was buttering his lordship's scones below stairs, sir.
I was planting my petunias in the potting shed.
Constable, arrest Lady Smythe.
It's easy to miss what you're not looking for. You see, our fight is not against what we can touch or see or smell or taste. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places." And so unless we begin to understand the nature of the war that we find ourselves in, we will not be able to properly wield the weapons that are at our disposal from God. We'll be like children trying to butter bread with a longsword. You see, our wrestle, our fight, our battle is not against the visible enemy with visible weapons, but it's against an invisible enemy with intangible weapons. And so the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was to convince a whole bunch of people that he didn't exist. And unfortunately, there's a whole bunch of people, including many of you that are watching, that perhaps don't actually truly, honestly believe that the devil exists. And because you don't believe he exists, you don't appreciate that there is a fight, that there is a battle going on. And so as believers, we find ourselves caught beautifully between two worlds, as citizens of earth and as citizens of heaven. And this coronavirus crisis has brought to the fore Zoom, which is just a beautiful illustration of the tension we find ourselves in as believers, caught between two worlds. You see, as we come and we use Zoom, I can sit in my home in front of my computer and be present there, but at the same time, through Zoom, be present in someone else's home somewhere else in the world. And so I'm in one place, but at the other place at the same time. It's something of the tension that we find ourselves living in. You see, we're caught between two ages, situated somewhere after the death and resurrection of Jesus, but before the return of Christ. And so Timothy Gomba said, "There are two ages up and running. The new age, begun in Christ by the power of the Spirit, and the old age, or the present evil age, which is still ruled by the fallen powers. This is why our current existence as followers of Jesus is filled with tension." And so if we don't begin to understand and appreciate the nature of the war that we find ourselves in, we will not be able to wield the weapons that God has put at our disposal. And with that, we won't be able to live in the victory that Christ has won for us. We won't be able to live in the victory that many of you, that God has for many of you in the areas of your anxiety or depression or bitterness or sickness. Today, God wants to come and bring freedom to many of you. to the loneliness or the poverty or the lust that you battle against, to the cycles of divorce or substance abuse that you find yourself in, or to the low levels of self-esteem that seem to plague you, or to this pattern of self-harm that you just can't get away from. And so if you do not fully appreciate the nature of the war, you're not going to fully be able to wield the weapons that are at your disposal. And as a result, you're not going to be able to live in the victory of these things that God has for you. And so in 2 Kings chapter 6, we find a beautiful, stunning story where God literally comes and pulls back the curtain on the fight that is busy being fought. And it comes and illustrates beautifully for us the nature of the war, of the battle that we find ourselves in. And so the king of Syria, a major enemy of Israel, has the king of Israel in his crosshairs. He wants to come and find him, destroy him, and destroy Israel. But unfortunately for the king of Syria, it seems like the king of Israel is always one step ahead of him, always outmaneuvering, always outthinking him. And one day the king of Syria gets so frustrated, he thinks there's a spy in his midst, and he calls his advisors in. And one of his advisors says this in 2 Kings 12, Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom. And so obviously Elisha wasn't in the king's bedroom listening to him speak, but God was, and God was there, and he did hear. And through the relationship Elisha has with God, God shares these things with Elisha, who in turn shares them with the king of Israel. And this is how he is able to avoid and outmaneuver the king of Syria. And so as the king of Syria hears this, he becomes adamant that he's going to catch Elisha, and he finds out that he's hiding away in a city called Dothan, and he sends his army there. And so we pick the story up in 2 Kings chapter 6 verse 15, and we pick it up with Elisha's servant who is petrified. And so it says, when the servant of the man of God — the servant is the servant of Elisha, and the man of God is Elisha — and so it says, when the servant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, alas, my master, what shall we do? He said, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. I want you to see there that prayer in this moment, and as you read on and as you look at Ephesians 6, prayer is the catalyst to unleashing the weaponry that is at our disposal through God. And so he says here, so the Lord opened the eyes. As Elisha prayed, the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Elisha's servant looks at the situation in terms of flesh and blood, looks at it in terms of what he can touch and feel and taste and smell, and as a result, he's despondent and despairing. And perhaps it's worth mentioning that if you are ongoingly despondent and despairing, it's that you might be guilty of looking at the world around you through the lenses of the flesh far too often and far too much. But on the other hand, when Elisha looks at the situation unfolding, he sees it as God sees it. And unlike his servant who is despondent and despairing, Elisha is buoyed and courageous and confident in God, because he knows God is at hand. And I think it's worth saying here that maybe you're convinced that the devil does exist, but the next thing we need to kind of get out the way is this idea that the devil is God's counterpart or peer, that he is somehow equal to God. And we need to understand that the devil is not at all equal to God. This is a load of rubbish. God is far superior to the devil in every way you might think. God is uncreated and the devil is created. God created all things, and part of that is the devil himself. And so when we come and think of the devil, we can't come and mistakenly ascribe to him the ability to be everywhere at the same time. No, he can't do that. He's not God. God can, but the devil cannot. And so Elisha has this ability to see and understand things from God's perspective, to see past the veil of flesh. And so my big idea for today is such a simple, such an easy idea. It's that the spiritual realm is real. This is all I want us to understand. This is all I want us to get today, is that the spiritual realm is real. Because if we get this, if we begin to understand that the spiritual realm is real, then we'll understand the nature of the war that is at hand. And we will then begin to wield the weapons at our disposal appropriately and in the way that God destined them to be used. And so the big idea is so simple, is that the spiritual realm is real. It's as real as your receding hairline. It's as real as Liverpool winning the Premier League. It's as real as panel shirts and Josh Groban going platinum. We might battle to believe it, but it doesn't mean it's any less real. The spiritual realm is real. And so the spiritual realm is what Paul calls the heavenlies. And throughout the book of Ephesians, you'll see him speak about the heavenlies or the heavenly realm. And it's also what what theologians call the second and third heaven. But what we need to understand is that some people come and see it differently and distinguish it in different ways. And so some only recognize the physical realm. Others dualistically come and understand that there is a spiritual and a physical realm, but separate them out from each other. But what we need to understand from the scriptures and from the Bible and from God's word is that he not only comes and understands and shows us and portrays our existence as both this seen physical realm that we live in, but also an unseen spiritual realm, but also in that these two realms are intertwined and somehow mingled together and coexist together. And so just as the greater danger of an iceberg is that which is lurking under the water, so too the greater danger in the battle and the war that we fight in this life is what is lurking unseen in the spiritual realm. And so God, I want to ask that you would come and open our eyes. God, open our eyes today, each and every one of us, that we might have our eyes opened like Elisha's servant, that we might begin to see as you see, that we might begin to see past the veil of flesh and to catch a glimpse of the unseen realm. And so every now and then we catch a glimpse. We catch a glimpse of this unseen realm, of this unseen reality. And so just as Peter had a dramatic vision of a sheet coming down from heaven and all kinds of creatures coming down with it, so too vivid visions are commonplace, are fairly commonplace to us today. And so R.T. Kendall, who shared 2 or 3 weeks ago that message, he talks about an episode early on in his life when he was a young pastor in his early 20s, driving home one Sunday afternoon from preaching. And as he's driving home, through the windshield in front of him, he begins to see the sky open up and he has this dramatic and profound vision that irrevocably changes the course of his life forevermore. And so he catches a glimpse in that moment. Just as the centurion Cornelius encountered an angel of the Lord in Acts chapter 10, so too angel encounters are fairly common in our context today. John Patton was a Scottish missionary to the New Hebrides Islands. One night, hostile natives surrounded his mission station, intent on burning out the Pattons and killing them. Patton and his wife prayed during the terrible night that God would deliver them. When daylight came, they were amazed to see their attackers leave. A year later, the chief of the tribe was converted to Christ. Remembering what happened, Patton asked the chief what had kept him from burning down the house and killing them. The chief replied in surprise, "Who were all those men with you there?" Patton knew no men were present, but the chief said he was afraid to attack because he had seen hundreds of big men in shining garments with drawn swords circling the mission station. So in that moment, the chief catches a glimpse behind the curtain. Just as Pilate's wife had a profound and disturbing dream in Matthew 27, so too vivid dreams are commonplace for us today. And so my wife, Kaz, often wakes in the morning and says, "I had a dream." And at that point, I know it's one of two things. Either I need to apologize for something that Dream Steph did to her, or alternatively, she had a dream from God. And often her dreams come and reveal things that are about to happen. And in those moments, she catches a glimpse beyond the curtain. Just as Saul encountered a resurrected Jesus in Acts chapter 9, so too there are those that are still encountering a real physical, tangible Jesus today. And I don't know how it works, but I heard this story, this amazing story from Francois, who many of you know, who's in Indonesia. And one from their group found themselves, and some of their group found themselves before a Hindu priest one day, wanting to share the gospel with him. And unfortunately, he wasn't open to it, and they were being turned away. And as they were, this priest's kid came out of the house, and their phone began to ring. And the ringtone on the phone was a Christmas carol. And so these folks said, "Do you know what that song is?" And the priest said, "No." And they said, "Can we tell you quickly what it is?" And of course, it was a Christmas carol about Christ. And so they start telling this priest about Jesus. And obviously, they're getting to share the gospel. And as they're doing this, this priest's eyes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually, he stops them and tells them that the person that they're busy telling him about is standing behind them. And so in that moment, this Hindu priest, of course, he comes to salvation, but he has an encounter. He catches a glimpse behind the curtain. Just as Paul describes being taken up into the second heaven, and the third heaven in 2 Corinthians 12, so too there are those who are experiencing the same thing today. And so my brother, a couple years back, was on the operating table when this happened, this profound thing happened to him. And in that moment, he caught a glimpse behind the curtain. And just as the little slave girl was delivered from demons in Acts chapter 16, so too there are similar experiences today. And so just this week, Francois, again in Indonesia, was telling me about something that happened there, where there were some of the girls from their group, their community, that went to a northern part of Bali to go and distribute food parcels there. And when they came to the family, they found out that there was a young girl who was locked away in an outside room in the garden, who was naked and who was as wild as an animal. And so they began to go to her and minister to her and to pray with her. And they saw these demons being delivered. And over the course of 2 or 3 hours, this girl was radically freed. And as a result, 20 or so families in the surrounding community came to faith. And so in that moment, this little girl and those girls caught a glimpse behind the curtain. And just as the disciples see the demons enter into the pigs in Matthew chapter 8, so too there's similar experiences today. And so a friend of mine tells me the story about the last time that he took drugs. And it was an occasion where he was busy tripping, and next thing he started to see demons. And in that moment, the curtain was pulled back and he began to see something of the spiritual realm. And it was enough to stop him from ever taking drugs again. And just as Jesus encountered the devil when he was tempted, so too there are people that have similar, sadly similar experiences today. And so I remember being in Namibia, sitting around a fire and sitting with an old man who had been in some form of church leadership in his life. And he spoke around an encounter that had arrested him and in fact paralyzed him. And he spoke of it as being the devil himself who came and met with him. And from the terror in his eyes, it looked like he was telling the truth. And he spoke about this hand that manifested itself and put itself on his arm, and he was paralyzed and couldn't move. And just the sheer fear that gripped him in that moment. And so in that moment, he caught a glimpse behind the curtain. And so the big idea is simply that the spiritual realm is real. The spiritual realm is real. But I also want you to remember, what Elisha said, that those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Or as the Apostle John puts it, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. And so there is a spiritual war that is being waged, a very real and sometimes a very tangible and manifest war that is busy happening. But if you are with Jesus, then you need to know that those who are with him and with us are more than those that are with them. And so in Matthew 26, Jesus remarks that if he wants, and if he just cried out to his Father in heaven, that God would put 12 legions of angels at his disposal. And so a legion is 6,000 soldiers. And so in effect, 12 legions is some 72,000. And so Jesus is saying, I've got this. In fact, I've got more than 12 legions at my disposal if I just called out to God. And if we just reach back into the Old Testament, into 2 Kings 19, there's an encounter where an angel of the Lord comes against the army of the Assyrians and strikes down in one night 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. And it's this devastating blow. And so if we just for a moment assume that these 72,000 angels that are at the disposal of Jesus have the same ability as this one angel in 2 Kings 19, then it would equate to the same as some 13.5 billion people being struck down in a single night. That is the might and the angel armies that stand behind Jesus Christ and our Lord. And so when we say that those who are with Jesus are more than those who are not, it is something of an understatement. And so as I finish this message, I want to come and remind you of what Paul says to the Ephesians and what he says to us. He says in Ephesians 6, "Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God." And so from next week, we're going to begin looking at the armor of God, but it was so important and vital for us to start here today and to set the stage talking around the nature of the war that is at hand and the nature of the war that we find ourselves in. Because if we can do that, then we will begin to discern how to properly wield these weapons that God has put at our disposal. And so in Lord of the Rings, as things are escalating and coming to the climax of this final big battle, Theoden, king of Rohan, comes in and makes the statement. He's caught saying that he doesn't want to risk open war. And Aragorn retorts quickly and sharply, and he says, "Open war is upon you, whether you risk it or not." And I want to say to you, I want to say to all of us that open war is upon us, that every day we are wrestling and we're struggling and we're fighting in the midst of this battle that is at hand. And I want to call us and ask us to understand and discern the nature of it. And so as we transition into a song now, I would urge you to be reminded of the moments in your life where the curtain has been pulled back and you've caught a glimpse of the spiritual realm, whether it's been in a dream or a vision or a prophetic word or a tongue or an experience, or whether it's been in a miracle or a sign or a wonder. I urge you to consider and to think about those moments in your life that God has so kindly pulled back the curtain and he is showing you something of the spiritual realm that you might remember and that you might be sold out and absolutely convinced that the spiritual realm is real. But then also remembering that greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world.